from KQED.
Welcome back to Forum. I'm Dave Iverson in this morning for Michael Krasny. A major shift is now underway in California's criminal justice system. Starting last Friday, those convicted of certain lower-level offenses will be sent to county jails or to alternative programs rather than to the state's prisons. It's called realignment, and the goal is twofold: to relieve overcrowding in state prisons, something the United States Supreme Court has ordered California to do, and also to save money. But how well prepared are counties to contend with this new influx of prisoners? And will the money be there to pay for them? That's what we're going to explore during this second half hour of Forum this morning. Joining us first to talk about this is Matthew Cate. He is Secretary of the California Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation. Secretary Cate, thanks for being with us this morning.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Let's begin by defining who now will wind up in county jails rather than going to the state prison systems. The quote that I've read is these are for offenders who are nonviolent, non-serious, non-sex-related crimes. Can you be more specific about exactly what that means in terms of who will wind up being in county jails as opposed to now being sent to state prisons?
Well, there's really two ways that you can go to county jails as opposed to going to state prison. One is that you would be newly convicted of a crime that is non-serious, non-violent, non-sex, as defined in the penal code. So the penal code has a list of serious crimes, violent crimes, and sex crimes. If you're convicted of one of those, you go to prison still. Or if you have a serious or violent crime in your past, meaning you're a striker, or part of the three strikes law, you still go to prison as well. And then there's about 66 other crimes that made neither list that law enforcement asked to be included. And for those crimes, you also still go to prison.
And so for those, give us a few examples of the kinds of offenders who would now wind up going to county jail, whereas in the past they would have gone to a state prison.
The most common, of course, is drug possession, drug sales, and theft-related crimes. Those will make up the vast majority.
And one thing that's important to be clear about is this is from this point forward, correct? These are people who would be sentenced starting now, starting actually last Friday, as opposed to we're not going to see people bust from San Quentin down to the Alameda County Jail.
You know, it's funny. That's absolutely right. But we had a number of television news stations call over the weekend asking for footage of inmates being bussed from prisons to jails or onto the streets. And, of course, that's not happening at all. As you say, it is a prospective measure. So only those who are newly convicted from this point forward would begin to trickle into the county jails.
And if it's a trickle, how will that solve the state's problem with overcrowding? Since the United States Supreme Court has ordered the state to reduce its state prison population by 30,000, if it's a trickle going from this point forward, how does the math work?
Well, the math works because the other group who can't come to prison any longer are parole violators. So if you commit a technical violation of parole, for example, you've used drugs, you have a dirty test, instead of going back to prison, you would serve your parole violation term in the county jail. And last year, we had 47,000 offenders who served 90 days or less. And so those people will attrit out of the system, having served their time very quickly, and they won't return. And that's where the majority of the benefit comes.
And how quickly will that happen? I mean, how long will it take before the state prison population is actually reduced to that 30,000 figure?
Well, we know that we're supposed to reduce our first 10,000 by Christmas Eve. And we won't make that. Even with realignment, we'll be over. And so we will likely have to ask the court for an additional couple of weeks. But we think in January we'll likely meet the first 10,000. And then it's really about, between 8 and 10,000 every 6 months thereafter until you reach the 30,000 mark. And I think it'll be close. We're not positive we'll get there, but we should get most of the way there through realignment.
Matthew Cate is the Secretary of the California Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation. He joins us as we talk about the new effort called realignment, directing some forms of criminal offenders to county jails rather than to the state prisons. As you know, Secretary Cate, this is a move that has not been universally greeted with enthusiasm at the county level. I'd like to play for you a comment from Los Angeles County Supervisor Michael Antonovich about his concerns about what's going to happen in his county with these prisoners or with these convicted criminals now winding up at the county rather than in state prisons.
What the governor and legislature has done is use the 58 counties as a dumping grounds for their state felons. We will have in our neighborhood jails felons who have prison sentences from 16 months up to 25 years.
So the concern you hear from Supervisor Antonovich and others, including the district attorney in L.A., Steve Cooley, is that they're not prepared to do this. This is actually going to wind up having a domino effect because now with these prisoners coming in, it'll push other prisoners out. Crime rate would go up. How do you respond to that concern at the local level?
Well, first of all, I think we have to remember that realignment may not be perfect, but it's better than dumping 10,000 prisoners onto the street on Christmas Eve. I mean, you know, it's not really fair to say, well, boy, I sure miss the good old days. I wish everything could just stay the same, because that decision was made by the United States Supreme Court, and there's no appeal to that. But secondly, I think it's also important to remember that 95% of people who go to prison return to their county of origin. So these aren't strangers to Los Angeles. These are citizens of that county who have gone to prison and come back. And now they'll go to jail and come back. But it's not like there's going to be a massive change in who is going to be returning to the streets of L.A.
Understood that given the Supreme Court's order that you're left with a series of options, none of which are obviously going to be perfect. But would you concur, would you acknowledge the district attorney's point, Steve Cooley's point, that because more people are now going to be shoved into the Los Angeles County Jail, that means some people are going to be pushed out and that that may have an effect on crime rates in L.A.?
Well, what the district attorney is assuming is that the state's way of doing business is the best way. In other words, he's suggesting that L.A. should keep people in prison, the same people for the same length of time that the state has always done. Well, with our 70% recidivism rate, I'm not sure that's the best model. If you talk to the Probation Chiefs Association, you talk to the Statewide Sheriffs Association, the Police Chiefs Association, they have all said one thing. They believe they can do a better job than the state has done if properly resourced. Sheriff Baca has 4,500 empty beds that he can't fill for lack of funding. So I think it's yet to be seen whether we'll get a better result or not.
Are you optimistic then about this idea that if you have people closer to home, that they will receive certain kinds of rehabilitative services, that the old idea of rehabilitation can become more real if it is at the local level?
Absolutely. I have talked to almost every county but at this point over the course of the last 9 months as we've been shaping this program. And the one resounding theme, or maybe two themes, one is we can do a better job, and two, counties believe in rehabilitation and they're going to fund it. And so I think we very well could get a better result as these counties realize these are our offenders. You know, they failed at the K-12 system maybe, and they've had a hard time on probation. But in large part, that's because counties have been underfunded to do what they know they needed to do in the past.
I know you have to leave us shortly, Secretary Kay, but let me just get one last put one last question to you, which is that one of the difficulties I would assume in this is that it sort of assumes all counties are alike, and of course they're not. There are going to be some counties that are going to be able to contend with this and others who will be really stretched and stressed by it. How do you respond to that concern that this is a sort of one-size-fits-all solution?
Well, again, I think that's a very valid concern. You know, there are certainly some counties who are way ahead of the game. They're going to get a markedly better result. We'll have far fewer victims. Crime will go down. And then you're going to have other counties that are going to need to get caught up really quickly. But I can tell you that if you take the long view, giving local communities the power to control their own criminal justice system and the power to be able to invest in their own communities, I think is better in the long run.
And sorry, just one last follow-up on that. since we're in the Bay Area here, which counties are best able to contend with this? San Francisco, San Mateo, Santa Clara, Alameda, Contra Costa. Who's ready? Who's not?
Well, I think the Bay Area is one place where we see counties are uniquely prepared. So I've seen San Francisco's report and their plan. It's fantastic. Santa Clara is focused on evidence-based practices. It's great. I've spent time with the Alameda County Sheriff and Probation Chief and the DA, and they're ready to go. So, I mean, every county I've visited or talked to in the Bay Area is really ready to take this on, and I think they all believe they'll do a better job than the state has done.
Matthew Cate, Secretary of the California Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation. Thanks for joining us this half hour.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Joining us now is Barry Crisberg. He's director of the Earl Warren Institute on Law and Social Policy at the University of California, Berkeley Law School. Dr. Crisberg, thanks for being with us as well.
Thank you for inviting me on.
Interested in your sense of the outline that you heard Secretary Cate put forward about, even though there are differences between counties, that in the Bay Area, at least, counties are ready. What's your sense of this in terms of county readiness to take on this new task?
I would largely agree with him. I think based on my talking with probation officers and sheriffs and some judges, it looks like several of the Bay Area counties are ahead of the game. They've been talking about this for a while, and they're moving forward. I think the big concerns we're going to have are going to be in the Central Valley and in the South.
And what will those concerns specifically be? Is it a question of having enough room, enough staff, enough rehabilitative programs? What is the nature of those issues?
Well, all of the above. There's over 20 counties that currently have court-ordered caps on their jails. So they're going to so for those counties where there's already a court-ordered cap on the jail, they're going to have to get creative in terms of reducing their jail populations to make room for the new folks from the state. And by all indications, many of these jails have much lower risk people who, with some smart programming, they could move out to make room for the state folks. On the issue of treatment resources, I think there's a lot of variability among the counties, and some people will just hit the streets running in terms of evidence-based programs. Others, this is still a learning curve for them.
You heard Secretary Cate say in response to Los Angeles District Attorney Steve Cooley's comment that there's going to be a domino effect, that with all of these new prisoners arriving at the county jail, some people who are currently in the jail will get pushed out. That, in turn, will bump up crime rates. You know, his point was in part, look, we don't have an ideal solution. This is better than just dumping a bunch of state prisoners out on the public on Christmas Eve. Point taken. But what's your sense of that and whether or not there will be a public safety risk as this goes forward?
Overall, I would say the public safety risk should be minimal. I mean, first of all, crime rates in California across the board are the lowest they've been since when Dwight Eisenhower was president. So we're starting with a very low base. Secondly, people coming out of prison contribute to the crime problem, but in a relatively small way. And so I don't see a crime wave. I think there will be crimes. It's inevitable. But again, put this against the current situation, which is 125,000 people released from California prisons, where up till now reentry has amounted to the L.A. County Greyhound bus station. To the extent that the counties can put in place evidence-based reentry strategies, the results should get better.
What does that mean, evidence-based? Secretary Cate referred to that as well, that that's what they're doing in Santa Clara County.
Well, there are both programs and approaches that the science is pretty clear will reduce recidivism rates. A few years ago, the Department of Corrections and the legislature spent $1 million bringing in national experts that looked at rehabilitation or the lack thereof in CDCR and outlined the kinds of programs which include job placement, emergency or transitional housing, helping people coming out of the prisons get mentors, providing adequate health care and mental health care. I mean, these are the things we know that if we do them, we're going to get lower recidivism rates.
Barry Crisberg joining us. He's the director of the Earl Warren Institute on Law and Social Policy at the University of California, Berkeley Law School. We'd like you to join us as well. Your thoughts on this idea of having more prisoners who previously went to state prisons now wind up in county jails. You can join us at 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786. Email us at forum@kqed.org, or you can go to our Facebook page and post your comment there. Also on our website, kqed.org/forum. It's interesting to me, Barry Crisberg, to talk about this question of rehabilitation and what we know can work, because to tell you the truth, I sort of forget about that word. When we think about prisons these days, when we think of all the problems that have beset California prisons, you sort of think of rehabilitation as being sort of no longer even possible. It sounds like, from what you're saying, it's actually quite possible if we put in place the right kind of programs.
I think it is quite possible. We have to remember that at one point, in response to great fears about crime, we took rehabilitation out of our penal code altogether. It says the purpose of incarceration is punishment. However, that hasn't worked very well. Recidivism rates increased dramatically since that took place. And in fact, we're in an interesting place because the public, overwhelmingly, 70 to 80% of the public, is looking for rehabilitation for the nonviolent, non-sex offenders. And so we've got public understanding that this is important. And because there's not a huge fear of crime right now, we've probably got a little bit of political window. Governor Schwarzenegger was very clear in terms of trying to introduce rehabilitation both into the prison system and around the state. He just could not get the support in the legislature to make it happen.
I want to play for you a comment from San Diego County Supervisor Diane Jacob, who talks about the counties being overwhelmed and not being prepared for this sort of change. Let's listen to what she has to say and then get your take on her concerns.
This is, without a doubt, the most historic change of the criminal justice system that's ever happened in the history of the state of California, with very little thought coming from our state legislators or the governor.
So what do you think of that, Dr. Crisberg? I mean, there is this promise of what could happen at the local level, but you hear people like Supervisor Jacob and others saying this hasn't been well enough thought out well enough, rather. There isn't enough planning that's gone into that. Is that a fair assessment?
Well, first of all, virtually every single statewide commission or task force has recommended something like this for the past 30 years. So I could give that supervisor a big, thick pile of reports that have been done over and over again by expert groups, by the legislative analysts. So the idea that it hasn't been thought through is not true. What is true is this particular reform was done through the budget process, so we didn't have all the hearings and all the elaborate process that sometimes you'd imagine. So there is a lot of work, and realignment's a work in progress. There's going to be a series of bills this year to clean up things that maybe weren't anticipated in the last time around. My biggest concern continues to be, though, that the current system does not have any oversight or any provision for tracking the results.
Mm-hmm.
We left that out, and so I think one strong fix would be to have some body like the Attorney General's office really keep track of how this is going, what's going on in terms of recidivism rates. They have the data to measure that, what's happening in terms of changes in crime. So I think there needs to be monitoring by some objective body that can report back, because again, there will be refinements over time, but this is not a new idea in California. We were doing this under Governor Reagan in the 1960s.
Let's hear what some of our listeners think about this idea. Bethany starts us out in Sacramento. Bethany, go ahead, please.
Hi. My husband is a former correctional officer and a current parole agent, and his workload was ridiculous. And really, he was monitoring people who were typically the guy who had two strikes because he had a quarter pound of weed twice or something like that. So the three strikes law, we all know, is a huge failure, and some of that was we took some of the onus out of the judge's hands and said, you know, this is what it's going to look like. So I think that this is going to help that, and I hope that this is going to help that. But my concern is that people like Phil Garrido, who was a low-level sex offender or something like that, but I think we none of us have a problem with trying to rehabilitate the guy who had some weed on him or, you know, the guy who just stole a couple of things. We're talking about our problem is more with the sex offenders and keeping our kids safe.
Bethany, thanks. Thanks for the call. Is there enough clarity to you, Barry Crisberg, about who will wind up in county jails, the low-level offender that Bethany was describing versus the sex offender? Is there clarity about that so that the more dangerous people aren't going to wind up in the county jail?
There needs to be more clarity. The current realignment structure is encompassed in 11 separate and distinct bills. A lot of us, both at the university and also the professional associations, are trying to provide clarity. But, yeah, there's a lot of confusion in terms of who will apply, who won't apply. And some of it is really just, you know, in a way, it's political rhetoric. I read the other day that one group was concerned that people who fashion weapons of mass destruction could go into county jails. Well, that might be technically true, but the fact of the matter is there's been nobody arrested for that crime in California for the last 10 years. Yeah. It's a federal offense, largely. So again, I mean, we could kite a lot of scenarios, and a lot of them are not true. On the other hand, there maybe are some specific amendments that have to be made. You know, other states that approach this did it through the creation of a sentencing commission in which an independent body staffed by experts looked at this and came up with a good formula in terms of who should go to prison and who should stay in local programs. States like North Carolina, Virginia did that. California, at least some Californians wanted that, but again, it got bogged down in the assembly.
And to Carl next in San Jose. Carl, go ahead.
Yeah, I don't have any big answers for this. I just would tell you our situation. Just a couple months ago, I went and picked up a man at the bus station down in San Jose who was just let out of prison. He was in there for a year and a half. We tried to give him every kind of help.
Sorry, Carl, are you you're a parole officer?
No, no. I'm just a regular citizen.
Oh, okay, go ahead.
And we brought him into our home gave him every kind of help he could, and he reoffended right away. Within a month, he took off. The police caught him by chance. He took $100,000 or more out of my mom's account, and it was a kind of an elder fraud thing. The point on this is that this was the same situation that he had been in before we found out, incarcerated before. The parole department did not come out to the house and talk to my mom or myself. They were supposed to come out, apparently, and see where he was living and this and that. And I guess I met the parole agent. He was a great guy and everything. I guess he's just so inundated that not following up. And this guy was not violent, hopefully, and he got caught and everything, which was good. But two points about this. Some of these people, you can give them every kind, apparently, you can give them every kind of help. And every benefit, education, he's a veteran, he gets medical care, he gets all this kind of general services, and they still, for some reason, will reoffend.
Carl, let me hold you there. I take your point. I'm sorry for your experience, but it gets us to this question of resources, Barry Crisberg, and money, frankly. One of the concerns that counties have had is whether or not they're going to have the money to be able to contend with this. We heard the story of the overwhelmed parole officer. What's your view on that part of that equation?
Well, the history of California in the last 25 years has been resorting to very expensive punishments, but then not investing in them, not spending the money. So we, at the same time, we probably got a lot of people in our prisons and jails who could be handled elsewhere, except we didn't pay for it. We didn't build all the jails cells we needed. We didn't staff these things properly. So it is true that the people working in corrections are understaffed, and part of that was what led to the recent Supreme Court decision. So it is a consideration, and it is real. The other thing is that California, for reasons that escape me, decided to fight a variety of lawsuits to the end, and as a result ended up losing a whole series of correctional lawsuits, which resulted in very expensive additions to how we run our prisons. So in a way, we were backed into a corner, and with a state facing a structural budget deficit and slicing education across the board, the citizens really have to ask, do we want to just keep investing in incarceration and imprisonment, or do we need to think about other aspects of the state that need to get money as well?
Samir writes in a similar vein, the public seems to be missing the point. California can't afford a system where the prisons are ever expanding and fail utterly in their rehabilitative goals. Are we ever going to talk and think seriously about reducing recidivism and other alternative strategies? And to what degree do you believe the prison guard unions and others control this matter? Two different points, but your sense about whether or not we're ever going to have, I guess, that larger conversation in our state, given all the other things that are pushing at our at resources in state government.
Every other major state in the United States is having that conversation now, and virtually every large state, whether it's New York, New Jersey, Florida, Michigan, Ohio, are all having that conversation, and as a result, they are reducing their correctional budgets. They are closing prisons. They are investing more in less costly sanctions. California is behind the curve and has to catch up.
And in the end, then, do you view this as, although it may not be as well planned out as some counties would like, the right step, the right solution at this point in time?
I think it's really our only reasonable option. I think Secretary Cade is right. Given the unchallengeable decision of the California Supreme Court, the only other option would have been just releasing existing prisoners. And this is a much more sensible and responsible approach to that. It requires a lot of changes that are going to take place. But change is long overdue in the California criminal justice system.
Barry Crisberg, director of the Earl Warren Institute on Law and Social Policy at the University of California, Berkeley Law School. Dr. Crisberg, thanks very much for being part of our program today.
Thank you.
Forum is produced by Kevin Guillory and Judy Campbell. Danny Bringer is our engineer. Dan Zoll is our senior editor. And Raul Ramirez is our executive producer. I'm Dave Iverson in for Michael Krasny today. This is Forum on KQED.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation in honor of Louise and Claude Rosenberg.